Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
It's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Here we are, folks, the publisher, the professor, and the editor. Isn't that a great thing to be here?
Yeah, and we got an audience today, so
we have a live audience. That's true, the New Visions students of Professor Rich Bader and the visionaries, we would call them. These are high school students who take part of their senior year to be engaged in learning about law and government. And I guess the media, since we play a role in that, we get their presence here.
Sort of like a hard or a bagel?
Huh? What?
Hard roll or a bagel?
You say we play a role.
Sorry.
Why did I pick up on that and you didn't?
Ira Fussfeld is publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York. Alan Shartok is the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in Albany, New York, where this program originates for those of you listening to us around the country here. Hey, there is new evidence of the fact that people are more and more getting their news from the mobile devices that we all carry in our pockets now. 63% of people who own cell phones use them to get online. It's not surprising, but it's double the percentage who said they did so just 4 years ago.
Now, this is good news for newspapers, right?
It is, yes.
Why is that?
It's good news for newspapers that have been prescient enough to recognize the digital revolution and have prepared for it and have set up the infrastructure and the software beyond the mobile devices.
Now,
there are some companies that have been a little bit slower off the dime than others.
But you still haven't, you guys haven't been able to quite monetize.
Especially mobile, that's right.
That's right. So the question is, how can newspapers like the Hearst Corporations and yours and the Kingston Freeman, how can they make money off of this fact?
Well, it is hard. It's not as easy. You know, we've said before that the digital dimes are what is replacing print dollars, but you're just hoping that you pile up more and more of those dimes.
So what does that mean? In other words, when you say dimes as opposed to dollars, you mean that advertisers still aren't willing to commit these full amount of money that they would pay for a full page ad to be on your cell phone.
Well, it's that there is still a learning curve and that advertisers need to find a comfort level that their advertising money on digital is going to produce results for them. The other part of it is that digital advertising is less expensive as of right now than is print advertising. So the stream is coming in at a much greater rate. It is coming in at a significant double-digit rate at most places. But that stream is a thinner stream. You know, you're not talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, perhaps, in print. You're talking about tens of thousands of dollars in digital. But that's turning. And it's also the health of the newspapers, sadly, I guess, is being bolstered by the fact that we've made so many expense cuts to offset the revenue losses. And as what has just happened in Kingston, we are now printing our paper and Rex's paper in Kingston, and more newspapers are closing their expensive press rooms and farming out their printing to other places, and that's a significant expense saving.
Well, no, I understand that, but I'm concerned, you know, the old humma, humma, humma business. You know, on the one hand, you're telling us that everybody's looking at their iPhone for the news, but that you've cut back on your news, your basic numbers of people who go out and get the news. And that seems to me to be a problematic issue.
That is a concern. But the other thing is that the advantage that you have if you're holding this digital device in your hand, which is not just a cell phone anymore, but it's your access to the internet, is that it gives you access to so many voices, not just the voice of the Times Union that you have been getting in print at your doorstep every morning for 50 years, but as well, you get the Twitter feed from someone who is feeding you the latest news that they have just seen, or you're getting having access to popular internet sites. Maybe it's something lively like BuzzFeed. Maybe it's you're getting an internet a digital newsletter, Wonk Blog from the Washington Post or something like that. So there are many, many sources now. People are getting more sources for access to information.
So let me ask you both a question. If there's a lot of social media out there, and a lot of it is crap, let's face it, but there's some good things coming out of it. Do you have to devote resources in your newsrooms to capture some of that stuff so that you can put it online yourselves? Because, you know, everybody aggregates what you do. I mean, there are all these aggregators, these people who put these things out every morning and say, okay, you got to read YNN, or you got to read Liz, or you got to read this one. I mean, do you have to be careful about capturing what they're doing?
We do, and we do that. We have, we have the AM Roundup, for example, is a very popular, our best time of the day for Capital Confidential, our big blog on state government and politics, is first thing in the morning. And we actually create a newsletter that we push out to about 2,400 people.
I'm one of them.
That's a good thing. And what you read there is not only our content, but also the stuff from all over the state, so that you don't have to go searching for the Buffalo News and papers.
But see, I'm not only talking about that. I'm talking about some person who tweets.
Some twits tweet.
This guy, note to our audience, Alan's really with it here on this stuff. Okay, that's good.
So they put out something like, massive fire in Houston, which is not yet covered by the paper. Well, that's a bad example, because that would be covered by the paper. But, some insight that nobody else has. Mm-hmm. Do you devote personnel to just looking at those things that go viral?
I can't speak for Rex. I think, and I go back so far that it's hard to believe I even remember it. But when I first started at my newspaper 43 years ago, we were an afternoon paper. And so we would come in the morning with having no reporters working all night. And the first thing that the morning reporter would do would turn on the local radio station to hear what they were reporting.
And steal from them as opposed to them stealing from you.
Not so much stealing, but seeing what's been reported so then we could devote our own resources to it. Well, now let's flash forward. We all have, in some form or another, not only all of the local newspapers in our market coming into the newsroom. We do a quick check of the radio, but we also have on not Hootsuite, but geez, I can't remember the name now. Where you see all the tweets coming in all day.
TweetDeck.
Yes. I have that.
So we're monitoring literally all day, and so if the theory is the same, it's just we've got it coming from many more places.
And you don't have to do anything, Alan, to see this. You know, the technology is such that it pops up on your screen.
Yeah.
So if a city editor is sitting there and something pops up in his screen that we don't have, that perhaps some TV station has a tidbit that they have tweeted that we haven't on a story, he can quickly call our reporter in the field and say, hey, News Channel 13 is reporting thus and so, and they do the same with us.
And the point about the mobile and why that's the growth of mobile is important to us is because if the mobile report that you are receiving is more often than not from my news agency or Rex's news agency, that creates a brand and it creates a subliminal, they're the go-to guys, so that the initial report will then hopefully be followed up with their eyeballs going to our website and maybe hopefully even our print edition. And all of these various platforms are being tied together.
Now, get one of the perils of this. You know, we use mobile now very much for reporting. Our digital devices, mostly iPhones, are great reporting tools because you can, in fact, our professional photographers, when they arrive at a scene of breaking news, are instructed not to use their great cameras first, but to quickly shoot something and send it to us with their iPhone so that we can pop it up on Twitter or pop it up on the website right away.
Is the resolution of those things good enough, right?
Absolutely.
And now there are new apps coming out, I understand, or out already, that you can attach to your iPhone that will make the picture even better.
Really?
Well, you're talking about the new operating system?
No. I'm talking about something, an app that goes onto your iPhone. Oh, you fellows don't know about this?
I don't think you know what you're talking about.
Yeah. You fellows don't know about this.
I know that the new iPhone is coming out, and who have old iPhones were able to download a new operating system, and the camera and the video is sharper on the.
That was yesterday, Ira.
It literally was yesterday.
Yes. But here's what I was about to say about the danger of using these implements as reporting tools is your inclination is to report whatever you hear or see or get, and as we recently found in the mm-hmm. Washington shootings, shootings at the Navy Yard, in which 12 people were killed, and the 13th, the shooter. a lot of bad information got out because of people wanting to just get the information out, whether it was actually accurate or not. NBC and CBS, for example, both identified the suspect without official confirmation and ended up having to retract. There was a the numbers were reported. The Washington Post reported, again digitally right away, that there were three shooters, then revised the number to two. They described the shooter's race. Drudge Report, for some reason, picked up a description of one of the shooters as being bald and black. The police chief, Kathy Lanier, said the missing suspect is white and said there was a second suspect black. Both of those, of course, ended up being inaccurate. And most significantly, a lot of times reporters will go ahead and report what they hear on police scanners, and that is very bad practice.
Because cops aren't good reporters.
Well,
it's just initial information. It's just incomplete and often inaccurate. And I would submit what you just described, we've talked about at least a half a dozen times in the last couple of years. It happened during the Boston Marathon bombing when all of this information was coming out. Somehow this industry has got to figure out a way to put a monitor on itself and be more careful about what it puts out. And on the other hand, going back to brand, if you are known as a brand that's putting out this information that they then have to retract, it's going to hurt your brand. And it's going to make you less attractive as a place to go for readers.
Is there any evidence of that at all? I mean, it sounds that's the kind of thing you hear in pompous journalism schools as professors.
What if you get it wrong? People don't care
that your brand will be affected, and that
people.
I mean, people walking around in the streets now saying NBC got it wrong, and therefore they're not worth looking at.
I think it actually does affect things. I think one of the reasons that the Drudge Report is not as big now as it was during the Clinton era is because he's gotten so much wrong. You yourself have very low opinion of the New York, what is that newspaper called again?
POST.
Ah.
I have a low opinion of almost everybody.
Well, we've noticed that. But, you know, before we went on the air, you made reference to the HBO series, The Newsroom. And the entire season that just concluded was based on this cable news network losing its credibility because it had aired a wildly inaccurate report and that it had damaged its brand.
Which is based upon fact. That is, not specifically airing a report about a sarin gas attack that wasn't true, but rather the Navy's tailhook scandal, which turned out, aired by CNN about a dozen years ago, which turned out to be seriously flawed. They had people who actually set out to intentionally give CNN a bad story. They had a single producer, I think, at CNN who actually distorted the story, and it really damaged the CNN brand just as much as the Tylenol brand was damaged by the bad drugs that were sold 20 years ago.
You see, and respectfully, Rex, because I have nothing but respect for you.
Here it comes.
And for Ira, I don't agree with you. I think that just like in state government, for example, there's a sort of inside community that cares, but we know a lot of people don't care about it or understand it. I think it's also true there are myths about, you know, the media. And one of the myths is that everybody cared that NBC may have gotten it wrong. Absence of Malice, do you remember that picture?
Yes.
In which, you know, she's fed a bad story also and sort of gets ruined because of it. But I don't see that as happening, I'm pretty good at this.
Yeah,
this is the
same country where you could walk out on Central Avenue right now and ask 10 people who their assemblyman is and they won't know. So
you can ask who the governor is and they wouldn't know.
So there is always that. But nevertheless, you don't want to be in charge of a news organization that has created a credibility problem for itself. It is debilitating and it wears you down. And you don't want to be the subject of jokes such as those that Jon Stewart had the other night on The Daily Show. And I urge anybody who hasn't seen it to try to find the clip. He was all over CNN on its coverage of the Washington shootings and how the reporters were standing in the street essentially speculating, saying they're speculating when they really had nothing to say. And then the Jon Stewart cast did its own faux newscast ranking on CNN. It is priceless. You have to look it up.
And besides, Alan, if you really take the position that you take, you end up saying, well, then accuracy doesn't matter.
Oh, no. I mean, I understand why you guys do it. You people.
Why we try to get it right.
Why you people do it. And the reason is because you use this mythology in order to mobilize your staff and to incentivize your staff to get it right. You say, well, we don't want to be the laughingstock. And this is a terrible thing.
No, well, we don't want to do the bad thing. We want to do the unethical thing and get it wrong. I mean, getting the facts right is what my old mentor used to call the basic hack minimum. Getting the facts right is not great journalism. Getting the facts right is basic hack minimum. So, and if you can't get the facts right, you shouldn't be in journalism. I mean, absolutely. I would absolutely fire anybody who is repeatedly wrong at getting the facts right.
So going back
to
the...
Have you ever in your life fired anybody?
Yes, sir.
How many?
and going back to where Rex started, it's this new technology is making it irresistible for some organizations to put content up that they would not otherwise have put themselves...
Because they don't want to get beat.
They don't want to get beat. And they think they've got it right, and that's not good.
But the difficulty is, too, even respected news organizations sometimes get it wrong. The Associated Press removed a couple of photos that we looked at in our afternoon meeting where we pick what goes on the front page. Here was this photo of a guy lying on the ground next to a CVS drugstore in D.C. And there was nothing to suggest that he was, in fact, a victim of the shooting. But it happened at exactly the same time. And actually, it's somebody from Ira's company, a woman from Digital First Media, who tweeted her doubts. Pretty confused, she wrote, about how a wounded man was dragged to CVS from the Navy Yard. It's at least three blocks away.
Yeah.
Well, pretty funny. Turned out it was not related at all. AP ended up pulling back the photographs.
Is AP worse than it used to be?
No, I don't think so.
Well, because I saw something the other day. I heard it on our station, and I wasn't happy about it. It was an AP story in which they said that Spitzer, who had lost, had had to resign from Congress.
Ooh.
Under... What they did was juxtapose Wiener and Spitzer.
That was an AP story?
It was an AP story.
Oh, dear.
And David Gustiner, our wonderful producer of this very show, called up the AP and told him after I told David.
Is this the same Spitzer who lost that election after you were railing against the New York City newspaper's editorial pages for all supporting him and nobody was paying attention?
That's right. That's the same Spitzer for the same reason. Watch it, Buster.
And then he lost about 18 points within days of those editorials?
Yeah. That's
I just
right.
wanted to clarify that.
Well, you see, what happens when bullies gang up, it's not good.
Up and express their opinions. Yes. Yeah. Well, disagree with yours. Yeah.
Well, especially when you get the New York POST, which is really, you know, I don't want to comment on, and then the Daily NEWS.
But now, if those bullies are so potent, the bullies all endorse Scott Stringer over Elliot Spitzer.
Yeah.
The editorial pages of all three major newspapers in New York City, they also endorse Christine Quinn for mayor, and she didn't win. So what do you think is the... What lesson do you draw from that about those bullies?
Lots of lessons. Too many to go into right now.
All right. Well, very good. If you're just joining us, this is The Media Project from WAMC in Albany, New York. I'm Rex Smith of the Times Union. Ira Fussfeld from the Daily Freeman. And
him.
Whatever his name is.
Alan Chartok is the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
But I have a new theory on the pecking order in journalism. The really high-paid executives like yourself, Rex.
Right.
They put a lot of money into doing
neckwear, neckties.
Their shirts.
Oh, shirts, yes.
You know, they're very stiff because, you know, the guys who wear them are stiff.
Yeah.
Then you get the guys who are sort of semi-retired, although he's just been pulled back into harness, our wonderful Ira Fussfeld. And, you know, not so much on the collar starch. And then me, you know, Mr. Me wearing...
Rumpled.
Looking like Columbo, my hero.
Ah, well, there you go. That's the theory, and you're sticking to it. Hey, I want to paint a scene for you, by the way. Stick with me for just a second. In our main conference room in the corner of the newsroom, we have painted things on the walls. And I think you guys have been in this room. We have painted up along the line next to the ceiling the four major tenets of the Code of Ethics of the Society of Professional Journalists.
Oh, God. How many
and
times do you have to give us this?
And the first is seek
thing?
The truth and report it fully.
Oh, I'm going to throw
The up. Second is act independently. Yeah. The third is minimize harm. And the fourth is be transparent. And now it is
interesting. I can see right through you, Rex.
There is a new effort that actually two good friends of mine who are leading voices in journalism ethics are sort of championing. Tom Rosensteel and Kelly McBride are saying, you know, that second principle, act independently, they believe is problematic because journalism, Tom Rosensteel writes, is no longer the province of a homogenous group once dubbed working press whose financing is generated to produce journalism for its own sake. In the 21st century, journalism may come from think tanks and corporations, from advocacy groups and passionate advocates, from accidental witnesses and curious beginners and more. And so he says some of this may well be propaganda, but some of it falls squarely inside the best traditions of journalism. And I'm having a little trouble accepting this, not just because I don't want to have to repaint the walls of our conference room, but I think act independently remains a fundamental of journalism, and that if what looks like journalism is still produced by people who are not independent, by people who are, in fact, on the payroll of one organization or another that makes them less independent, that that remains an ethical problem for
us. So let me ask you this, Rex, back to you. Do you think that Rupert Murdoch and Zuckerman of the Mort Zuckerman of the Daily News, do you think that those guys don't have an agenda just because they own a newspaper? Do you understand my question?
I do.
Not terribly articulate.
No, that was pretty good. So do the newspaper owners have an agenda?
So in other words, you think that some guy in a boardroom is not really a journalist, but these two characters who set up Murdoch and Zuckerman, who often has, you know, some point of view, are independent?
Well,
because they have a newspaper?
The CEOs, indeed, are not. But I'm saying that the journalists who work for them, the reporters for the Wall Street Journal who work for Murdoch, for example, ought to be independent of any allegiances that Murdoch may have to one person or another.
Okay, and so you think that's true of the POST, of the Post?
I've never said that it's true of the POST, too. POST.
Okay.
I think it's different, yeah. And that's why I don't consider it to be an ethical practitioner of journalism. But I think that for those of us who want to adhere to the high standards of journalism practice, we ought not to say that, gosh, sometimes those who make the news will also cover it. I don't think you can do that. Here's the great example. The NFL now, all the NFL teams have bloggers who cover their own teams. And a lot of people are taking that stuff that those bloggers produce to be serious reporting on those teams. I don't think if your paycheck is coming from the Atlanta Falcons that you can really write about the Falcons with independence and be considered a real journalist.
Well, Ira's the sports
guy. Well, but it transcends sports. Just so that
I want to stay with the sports.
But I'm staying to the point. Just so that we all understand, when the code of ethics that you describe uses the word independently, how do you define it in that sense?
It really is, do not let any of the external forces affect you. It's not just saying, okay, a member of the city council bought me a beer last night and therefore I can't cover the guy. I mean, it is that you shouldn't let any of your personal views affect your coverage. I'm not a member of a political party, for example, because it seems to me that that sort of independence of a political party is one of the decisions.
Yeah, but if
ourselves.
I drilled inside your brain, sir.
Yes.
I'd find out who you were fast enough.
Absolutely.
And I would find out what your worldview, Weltanschauung, is, right?
We all have one.
We all have one, yeah. And if you are preaching the gospel of transparency, wouldn't it be better for me to know what your political leanings are as a journalist so that I can hold you accountable, sir?
I agree with transparency.
Well, so then go to Alan's question and your point. I think that you can still have that sign up on your wall without being repainted. There is no reason why journalists, even in today's marketplace, can't remain independent and still be aware of the kinds of concerns that you have. And to Alan's point, or Rex's point, that so-called blogger reporter who was hired by the team, Rex's famous news literacy has got to come into play. And so the people who are reading and digesting that material have to understand who the reporter is.
Well, as distinguished, I'm sorry, we only have a minute left, but as distinguished from the New York teams being covered in a particular way by the New York tabloids.
That's correct. And then the distinction being that they are not paid by the teams and hopefully they are honest brokers of the news. That does not mean that reporters from one newspaper or another could reach a different conclusion and have a different story, but we would like to think that they are doing that and coming to those conclusions on their own.
I always love it when you say hopefully. Keep on hoping.
It's like when we used to negotiate union contracts, they loved it when you used the word notwithstanding.
Notwithstanding, heretofore.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to do a little thinking more about this and write something good, and I'll be able to come back.
Probably be right in your blog, right?
And when I finish my current tenure, I can bring my paint can up to your shop.
Thank you very much. That would be very generous of you. All right. Well, we've reached the end of our program. If you wish to comment, we are media@wamc.org, media@wamc.org, or you can write to us at 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. We're the Media Project. Alan, Ira, and Rex.
Nice to see you. Thank you for the group to coming in.
Great. Yep. We'll see you, visionaries, in just a little bit. Thanks, folks. Join us next week.
Extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.